This is Ron Oral, and I'm super excited today to be speaking with Brendan Fu, co-CEO of Forward Risk, a business intelligence and investigations company that was established in 2016 to advise an activist who remains a big client. It's quite interesting. Today, Forward Risk has staff in Washington, New York, and London, and roughly 40% of its overall work involves activism. Now, typically, you're about half of its activism-related clients in the U.S. and Canada are investors. So Forward Risk was acquired by Avisa Partners in 2022, and later the firm was renamed Forward Global. Thanks, Brendan, for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Ron. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, so let's get right to the questions. I suspect that when you work for an activist or company, you're generally looking at director candidates proposed by both the activist and the company, as well as C-suite individuals such as CEOs and CFOs. Tell me, is that right? Just tell me a little bit about your process and whether it is really you're focused on director candidates and CEO candidates, I guess.
Yeah. So typically, you know, we look into the management teams, your most senior executives of a company. That could be your CEO, your chairman, your CFO. We also certainly look into director nominees, both on the offensive side as well as on the defensive side. So if we were working for an activist, we look into the company sometimes months ahead of them even engaging. We help them to figure out what the vulnerabilities might be, what the upside might be. I think the best investors are those that look at upside as well. And the work that we do feeds into the convictions of their investment teams so that they know exactly what they're getting into. As they start looking for individuals to nominate to the board, we look into vetting them as well. We look into new nominees that the company might be putting forth in order to bolster itself now that an activist has come calling. Pretty much any time there is an individual who is involved in corporate governance at that senior executive or board level that needs to be vetted, it is always helpful, we say, to bring us into the game.
Okay, so that's fascinating. I'm so fascinated by this kind of world of business intelligence as it pertains to activist investors. Seems like there's a lot of that going on with both activists and companies and intelligence firms advising activists, intelligence firms advising companies. So what kind of things do you look at? I'm curious, a few things that I've always wondered about and the things that I kind of try to look at as a reporter is the previous track record for executives, their directors, their character, their temperament, which I think is an interesting point that maybe, I don't know if that was such as focused on 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And inconsistencies with resumes and credentials. This is something obviously activists point out. They say this CEO did not actually go to school where he said he did on a resume. And that could be pretty damning.
Oh, it certainly can be very damning. I think it's just embarrassing when executives and directors lie about their credentials. You didn't graduate summa cum laude, you know, let's not pretend you did. It was cool maybe 20 years ago when you were straight out of school, getting your first job. That doesn't fly in the boardroom. That doesn't fly on Wall Street anymore. But in addition to the whole host of things you just talked about, Ron, we look into the full civil and criminal litigation track record. We look into how have they been stewards in the past? Have they served on a public company board in the past? And if so, how have they interacted and engaged with shareholders on previous matters? Mm-hmm. Perhaps they were previously on a board that itself was attacked by a shareholder activist. In that situation, were they constructive board candidates or board directors, or did they instead choose to entrench themselves in a very unhelpful way? I think that gives our clients, as well as the rest of the market, a better glimpse into the track record or the way a director might think. It's very easy to think about our vetting process as just vetting for the activist so that the activist can win a board seat, unseat an incumbent director. But I would argue that a lot of the times, the work that we're doing on these individuals, that's stuff that the shareholders at large might find salient. Because if there is an individual on the board who has overstated or misrepresented their credentials, if they have temperament, judgment, character issues, are they well known for overseeing a corporate situation or corporate culture that is corrosive, full of bullying and harassment, things like that? I mean, these are things that shareholders want to know as well. And so we're not necessarily digging into them in order to embarrass them. We're not digging into their pasts to try to wreck their careers. I think we're looking into them because our activist investor clients care about making sure that people who are running these companies are the best candidates for the job.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a lot of those issues would be a problem with director candidates. So I wanted to just kind of delve a little bit into kind of your process a little bit. And I'm curious if most of your work involves reviewing public documents and records, or, you know, I always have this imagination that a business intelligence firm that is advising an activist or advising a company is knocking on doors, talking with former employees, litigation adversaries, which there's this one situation I'm following and where they're, I suspect the company is looking into an activist and whether it's working with some litigation adversary, ex-spouses, disgruntled partners. Are you knocking doors, or is it mostly doing investigation through reviewing documents? And then maybe you'll be hired then if something comes out of those documents, then there's a kind of second step to do knocking on doors.
Yeah, you know, I think the reality is that for almost 95%+ of the activism situations we're brought into, both by activists themselves as well as by the issuers, the work that we're told to do is online, public records only, open source research. So very, very rarely are we asked to knock on doors. Very rarely are we asked to speak to former coworkers, adversaries, family members. Oh God, no. And the reason for that is, you know, these are highly contested public company situations where the risk of running afoul of, you know, a whole series of regulations and laws is just so high. Is there a possibility that you learn material non-public information? Is there a possibility that you speak to someone who might break an NDA? We can try our very best to ensure that in situations where we talk to people, we tell them not to reveal things they're not supposed to. But ultimately, if they were to do so, that puts us in a really bad spot. But also importantly, I think it's relevant to think about what information is useful. The whole idea of knocking on doors, stalking targets and things like that, you're going to upset the other side first and foremost. And it's almost certainly, if done poorly, going to come back around and bite you in the butt if it comes out that you have been doing that. But it's very hard to do so in a way for an activism situation that your clients can use, unless they have a very, very specific argument they're trying to make, where you cannot make that argument based off of open source research. We often tell our clients to maybe think about that later on, or take a step back and think about what exactly it is that they need in order to win the contest, right? We think about, what is the ultimate purpose? Are they just trying to dig up dirt? Are they trying to gather intelligence? Because that's something that we can do based off of public records research. So I think it's just important to keep that end goal in mind. The other element here that I wanted to talk about is the fact that we often work with clients, both on the activist side, as well as on the defense side, who are very well represented by extremely well-equipped legal counsel. Their legal counsel have been doing this sort of work for years and years. They represent some of the best activists out there. In some cases, themselves come under scrutiny. And in those cases, I think it's important for clients to take what their advisors are telling them to heart, because you might have one-off companies who are seeing an activist for the first time, or one-off activists who are going after a company for the first time. And it often seems like having a private intelligence firm at your disposal opens up vast new horizons of dirt that you can dig up on other people. But the reality is truly that even just sticking to the basics, but sticking to the basics and doing it with flair, combining the art and science of intelligence gathering and working with a well-experienced, nuanced, sophisticated investigations firm, for example, Forward Risk, that knows how to put the information together in a manner that is going to be directly helpful to your strategy, I think that's going to make a way greater difference than whatever pithy little sound bites you may be able to get from doing the knocking on doors.
Okay, so that sounds like it's a direct repudiation of what one business intelligence advisor, who only advises companies targeted by activists and doesn't work with activists, argued that intelligent advisors to activists are, and he said, quote, knocking on doors in an aggressively crude way, asking the proverbial, when did he stop beating his wife type question. Sounds like a lot of Forward Risk's work is done with the, you know, public documents, open source documents, and still getting a lot of good results. So, okay. So you had mentioned to me before that you often advise companies and activists to see if directors are considered, quote unquote, interlocking incumbent directors. And we discussed how this was something the Justice Department has targeted and put a spotlight. Tell us a little bit about that. What does that mean to be an interlocking incumbent director?
Yeah. So this is an interesting question. Of course, one that I'm speaking about not as a lawyer, I'm not a lawyer, but as a layman. And my understanding of this is that per the Clayton Act, the DOJ is starting to look at directors who may serve on boards of two or more quote unquote horizontal competitors who happen to operate in the same space and compete with each other. And I think rather than get bogged down in the technical or legalistic elements of this, our understanding of this is pretty simple. We help companies or activists think about whether or not these individuals who are going to be on boards are going to be the best stewards of shareholder capital. If John Doe over here sits on the board of two directly competing companies, that's got to leave you wondering, well, where do his allegiances lie? If the two companies were to be involved in a competitive bid situation, is he going to be withholding his best advice from one of them so that the other one can prevail? I think that's a relevant question, but that's also a question that any layman who isn't think about it from the antitrust angle would think of as relevant and interesting.
Yeah, no, I definitely see situations where activists have brought up issues with directors and saying that they, you know, they serve on these competing boards of direct competitors. And it's definitely a problem. And it's funny, we did this article a few years back with our BoardX database, where we showed that there are a lot of directors that are serve on competing boards. And I don't know, it just surprised me that that could happen. So there's a lot of red flags out there. So, okay. I'm curious for activists. I wonder if you're hired when the, you know, the activist has launched the campaign, it has nominated directors, and then it hires Ford Risk to do the vetting there. Or is it that you're typically hired well in advance of the activist launching the campaign and they want to do some additional research? And I wonder also, sometimes are you hired to do some investigation into, let's say, a company the activist is targeting, and then after you produce your report, the activist decides not to launch a campaign? Does that happen sometimes? I'm just trying to get a sense of, you know, is your work typically done at a kind of, I don't know, months before the activist puts out their poison pen letter or launches a proxy contest, or does it often help them in behind the scenes negotiations with the company?
Yeah. In an ideal world, Ron, both the activists and, to the extent that they are able to, the issuers would come to us as early as they can in the process. So we advise activists when we get the chance to work with them to come to us when they start looking at a company. Because even understanding the principals, the executives, the boards that are helping to run the company, that in and of itself is valuable intel. Of course, you know, there are situations where activists might start an engagement and only later on in the process, when they've not been able to achieve what they've been looking for via engagement with the board, and then they decide that they need to launch a proxy contest, that they decide to come to us to start vetting the incumbent board as well as their potential nominees. From the perspective of the issuer, there are times where they only find out about a contest when the activist goes public, that they've been building up a stake, they haven't been doing any engagement beforehand, it's just straight out into the public eye, boom, boom, here we go. And in those cases, we often work with the issuers and on extremely compressed timelines, provide them with the intelligence they need to at least mount a good defense. You know, I would say that we're starting to see more well-advised company clients proactively look into their boards and look into their C-suites, both from the context of, oh no, we have an activist that is starting to amass a stake. We need to start thinking about any potential vulnerabilities. Do we need to replace someone? Perhaps we may have a director who's the longest tenured, whose skills are not individually additive or unique on the skills matrix. Maybe we replace that one individual and let's start getting the ball rolling even ahead of the activist launching their demands. There are also times where a company might find that there's a new 13D filer that they know absolutely nothing about, and they're concerned as to who that might be. And they might want to ask us to do a little bit more digging to figure out who these people might be. I think ultimately that these examples show that you've got at least a legal team, an advisory team that is teaching and advising their clients well to think about potential vulnerabilities before a contest has been launched, so that should there be something that goes into the public eye, that there'd be something a little bit more contested, a little bit more adversarial later on. Clients on both sides really are well prepared for an issue.
So you do a lot of work kind of in peacetime as well, where, you know, particularly with companies and they, as they're examining the director candidates and things like that, which raises an interesting question in my mind that I wonder if a lot of times directors need to be re-vetted. So if you have a director and that director was vetted 10 years ago or even 2 years ago, I don't know. I'm curious how often they need to be re-vetted, but I feel like, you know, things change between when the director gets appointed to the board and let's say 2 or 3 years later. So that's maybe one reason to re-vet the director. But also I feel like attitudes change about what constitutes a good director candidate. That director candidate that was good, you know, that the markets, the institutional investors thought was great 10, 20 years ago, they may not be so great. So I don't know, is that something you recommend, re-vetting existing directors, even though no activist is around?
In an ideal world, Ron, for my bottom line, I would say yes. But I think, you know, I think there are logical reasons to do so. And the first is, well, you've kind of answered some of my questions. You've provided the answers for me there. I mean, the first is just that people change, things change. We did a matter some time ago looking into an incumbent director for an investor. And that director had been on the board for, I want to say, 12 years or so. And the company said everything was fine. But as we looked into this individual, we found that there were some local stalking and harassment charges against him about maybe 5-7 years ago. And so that was way after he had joined the board. The board never knew about that. And right. Even if they had done the best vetting of this individual ahead of time, they wouldn't have found out if they weren't re-vetting him. So that's one issue. And of course, they ended up giving him a face-saving off-ramp where he retired to spend time with his family. So that was all fine and dandy. Other things that could change are the fact that directors, executives, etc. might come and go in addition to who we're kind of currently looking at. And these new additions to the board, they may have worked with these directors in the past. They may have had family members who are connected to these directors. And that starts becoming an independence issue. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things that we look out for our clients is, are there independence issues? Are they potentially too closely linked? So if I was on a board of a company and I've been on the board for 12 years, which could itself be a cause for concern because after a certain number of years, the possibility of groupthink does increase. But say a couple of years down the road, a bunch of other folks, maybe from my former company, joined the board as well. And it makes sense. You know, we're all in the same industry. This happens to be the industry that the board is working on, that the board of this company is in, right? And that on paper looks great. But if an activist were to come knocking, then they're going to realize that me and my three new best friends who are also on the board all used to work at the same company together. And they're going to start wondering, well, yeah, okay, these guys have known each other for a long time. There are independence issues. But also, simply put, why are we getting one director for the price of four?
No, that's a good point. They definitely need a variety of directors. And I see so many companies. There's one that I was reading about just this past week where there's nobody on the board that has experience in the industry that the company focused on except for the CEO and the chairman who was the former CEO. I see that so many times. But anyways, we are out of time. You have been listening to the Activist Invest in Today podcast, and we've been speaking to Brendan Fu, CEO of Forward Risk, a business intelligence investigations company. Thank you, Brendan, for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me here, Ron. It's always a pleasure.